you're tired of one-sided conversations and mean-spirited rhetoric, it's time to listen and engage. This is The Rational Revolution, a look at today's issues through a politically purple lens. Now, here's your host, Chris Elfheim.
Well, hello, Wisconsin. This is Chris Elfheim with The Rational Revolution. We are broadcasting from Green Bay, Wisconsin. It's a beautiful day out here. Hope your week has gone well. I am here tonight joined by a couple of my favorite guys. I have with me on the phone former Congressman Reed Ribble. How you doing, Reed?
Hey, I'm doing great, Chris. It's great to be with you.
I love having you on. And today we also have an old friend of yours as well. We have Mr. Mark Becker on the line. Actually, he's in studio with me. Say hello, fellas.
Hello, hello. Reed, it's great to hear your voice.
Hey, Mark. Good to be with you today. Thanks.
Yes, thank you.
You know, the thing people don't realize about the political world is it's a fairly small one. And little by little, if you have interest in advocacy of any kind, whether it be voluntary or elected, you get to know people because that's your job. Your job is to show up and share what's on your mind and what's important to you. And our best leaders elected in their positions take the time and they sit and they listen to those concerns and we talk about it. And I've had the privilege of doing that with Reed over the years. These two guys, though, Mark and the congressman actually had a lot more of an intimate relationship, as Mark is the former chair of the Republican Party up here in Brown County. So, when you were in, you had an opportunity to spend some time fairly frequently with Mark, I would assume.
I did. Yeah, almost every time I was in town, Mark and I saw each other at least for a few minutes. And sometimes for much longer.
Yep. Ironically, we're sitting in downtown Green Bay, and the congressman would come up to my office very frequently, and we would have Wisconsin-made beer. Wisconsin-made beer only. There always were a couple of Guinness in the fridge across the river there, but we never had that. In case someone walked by, the congressman always had a Wisconsin brew in his hand. Always. So tonight's conversation, you know, just to kind of set the stage, our goal here on the radio is to have conversations that, you know, kind of go back to the old days where we can disagree, we can talk about issues that we aren't necessarily familiar with, but they affect all of our kitchen tables. And I'm very excited tonight to have a conversation. I know that the two of you recognize there have been some pretty major changes in the Republican Party in the last decade. Mm-hmm. And I really would like to, again, with two of my favorite rational people, talk about why and how and when, and not from a screaming, kicking, hollering thing. This isn't about individuals. It's about really the physical change that took place and how we've gotten from where we were to where we are. And I think you two guys will be able to have a great, great insight on that for everybody. So I'm going to let Mark start because he's got I know you've got the national perspective, and I'm going to let Mark kind of come in on the local perspective. And we're going to kind of go banter, and this is going to be a little bit more of a conversation focused with the two of you, as I wasn't inside that party. I only got to talk to a bunch of people. But just let Mark start out with kind of where it was in your opinion and where we are now.
You know, that's such a good question. You know, because when I watching the news and seeing some of the articles that are coming out about the things that GOP leaders are trying to get done, and especially over the last, you know, 6 years, that question has crossed my mind so many times of how in the heck did we get to this place? When I joined the party, you know, I was a party operative, or, you know, worked in campaigns, especially on the Senate side, the Assembly side. And I really joined the party like 2008, 2009. So that was like, you know, Barack Obama, his first election, all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, there was some of the, I don't want to say crazy, but there was some of the little bit of a wing nutty wing of the party that.
Your words, not mine.
But, you know, there was some of that conspiracy type thing back then, but it was nowhere near like the mainstream GOP, you know, mindset. And, you know, so Reed, I think you would have much better of an idea as to when, you know, what was the beginning of this? Was it the Tea Party? Was it talk radio? Was it kind of towards the end of the George W. Bush era? You know, I don't even know where to start with this, really.
Well, I would say, first of all, this is not new.
Yeah, I agree.
We've had at least two other populist presidents besides Donald Trump, with Teddy Roosevelt and Andrew Jackson, both controversial in their own rights, even to the point of Teddy Roosevelt starting his own third party or independent party, the Bull Moose Party, which is a populist party. And so, first of all, this is not new. The breaking up or parties coming undone is also not new. The Republican Party was basically birthed after the breakup of the Whigs and the Know-Nothings in the late 1850s going into the Civil War. And I think what we're seeing right now is a new breakup of the Republican Party. I think it literally will break into. I don't think it will survive this. The traditional conservatives are not a large enough piece of the party anymore. If you look at, just compare how Nikki Haley is polling against Donald Trump in a Republican primary, and it's about a 60-40 split. And I think that that's probably reasonably what the base is. Now, I say the base because the base is a small part of the Republican Party, but it's enough to drive the agenda. I think this probably started in a post-George W. Bush era. There was a lot of frustration with the U.S. involvement abroad. Populists don't like that at all. They prefer a more isolationist approach. This whole America First movement was launched in the late 1930s as a result of the breakup of the German-American Bund. And it mimics very closely what was going on in Germany at the time, and we know where that led. That breakup was caused, or this movement was caused, by a group of Americans that felt the U.S. should not be involved abroad. That happened again with the Iraq, you might say, debacle, but the struggle with invading Iraq and the subsequent war on terror that lasted and continues to go on today for two decades now. And so I think there are a lot of things that were going on. As populism began to strengthen, the John Birch Society began to strengthen, and the Tea Party kind of was a landing spot for all of those back when I first ran for office in 2010. And we didn't see we didn't see the threat of it, or I didn't identify the threat of it until probably my third or fourth year in office, when it dawned on me that what the voters really wanted from me as a member of Congress was to be as angry as they were. But they didn't always identify what they were angry about. They were just angry at them. Them could be immigrants. Them could be Democrats in Congress. Them could be a Democrat president. That anybody who disagreed with what they believed. And so, and that's kind of landed us where we are today.
I would say that's exactly where we are today. Exactly. So, I mean, I think that part of the struggle that I have with this, and you know, it's very obvious on the side of the red, but there's dysfunction on both sides. We certainly could have that conversation, but you guys are more an expert, obviously, in your own house. But can we talk about the effect on the nation overall, not just the party, right? So, you know, those actions, those changes that have taken place, the populism, the anger, and how that that inside struggle of the GOP party itself is actually causing chaos for everyone, whether you're a Republican or not.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for me personally, I don't consider myself a Democrat, but you know, I left the Republican Party, obviously, and it's because of so many of these, you know, the this wing of the Republican Party that is the chaos wing. You know, it had many different faces in my time, from Ted Cruz originally to, you know, Marjorie Taylor Greene, some of those, and then into, you know, Donald Trump. But the national conversation we're going to have over the next 8 months or more, I truly, truly hope that we do see a splinter of this Republican Party, because it has to. We talk about, you know, the rational revolution. This is a conversation that is going to go very, very deep to the foundation of this country, you know, because one part of the Republican Party is not based in rationalism or reality.
Right.
And you have so many people trying to do the right thing and pull it in the right direction, like Reed did, like Mike Gallagher tried to do it. So, and they're getting forced out.
Yeah. I think that the mob mentality of all things that come from any news media, any fact is now not fact. Yeah. And I do understand that facts can be seen from different angles. I understand that. But the loss of faith in anything is really detrimental. Mm-hmm. I mean, there's just everybody now believes nothing that anyone says. So who can right that ship? Who from that party is going to finally be able to stand up successfully and say, some of this is garbage and we need to call it for what it is?
Yeah, I think there's one other piece here that has to be part of this discussion, Chris. And that piece is the use of social media.
Yes.
In 2015, we were aware that the Russians were going to be heavily engaged in the presidential race in the United States. We knew this because we saw them signing up hundreds of thousands of false or fake Twitter accounts, fake Facebook accounts. Almost every single anti-Hillary Clinton meme that you saw being passed around by the kind of conservatives that play in the social media space back in 2016, almost every one of those memes we knew where they were being generated, they were being generated in Moscow. And however, the Russians really did understand this idea of confirmation bias. If they said something that a group of people would agree with, that group of people would spread it like wildfire on Instagram, on TikTok, on Twitter, on Facebook, on every single social media site they could put it on. And this mood that we have in the country right now, where we only want to listen to people that tell us something that we want, we have a bias toward agreeing. So if you're a Republican, you have a tendency to listen to Newsmax or Fox News or whatever your favorite conservative radio station is.
Echo chamber.
If you're a liberal, you're going to be listening to MSNBC and other left of center media places. And every single day you get fed part truths.
Yeah.
And these part truths are designed by their very nature to mislead.
Yeah.
If I
hold on, Congressman, we're going to head
that is true, but it's only part of the truth.
Yep.
You might arrive at a conclusion that you otherwise would not arrive to if you had all the truth.
We're heading into a break. We're going to stick on this conversation, Congressman Reed Rebel, here on the Rational Revolution. Come on back. Welcome back, everybody, to the Rational Revolution, where we just try to have civilized conversation, speak our truths. We may disagree with each other from time to time, but it is a conversation. So I am joined here, very excited, of course, I have former Congressman Reed Rebel and my friend, former GOP chair up in Brown County and Brown County Supervisor, Mr. Mark Becker, with us. And we have been talking about the current dysfunction of the GOP party and where it began and where we are. And coming into the last break, Congressman was speaking about the influx of social media and the fact that in 2015, everybody in D.C. apparently knew that the Russians were influencing things and a lot of anti-Hillary stuff coming up. And that led us to the silo kind of mentality of media, where those who wanted to believe what they saw, then it spread like wildfire, just like, you know, lighting a match on powder. And, you know, there's a couple things in this that are scary. One, the fact that everybody knew it was coming from bad guys and nobody could do anything about it. Did they couldn't, or they chose not to?
I think that there were a lot of people working on it, trying to do the very best they could to control it. President Obama, if you remember, was at the end of his term. The Russian government certainly knew that he didn't have a whole lot of say on any type of sanctions. They would not be long lasting. You had the passing of the Magnitsky Act, which they absolutely hated when the U.S. Congress passed the Magnitsky Act. in response to Sergei Magnitsky being killed in a Russian prison.
Right.
And there was a lot of bad blood there between the Obama administration and the Russian administration. And Obama was going out. He was a lame duck and didn't have as much power to really apply the screws to kind of this rogue work that the Russians were up to. I think people were aware of it. I think they wanted to the degree they could stop it. But as you know, the social media world is kind of the wild, wild west, and part of its strength is its liberty that anybody can go directly to anybody else and say mm-hmm. what they want. Part of its bad thing is you can lie about virtually anything, and it can get spread like wildfire.
Right.
And so I do believe that technology companies and guys like Mark Zuckerberg are going to have to be more aggressive
yeah.
in what they allow people to see.
Yeah. It kind of would be nice if we just said don't. You know, wouldn't it be lovely if you just had to watch live debates to find out how people were? You actually had to answer. We all had to answer questions.
Show up to the debate.
Show up, answer questions
yeah.
honestly.
Yeah.
You know, there is a reality to that, right? Don't you think part of the problem that we have today is that it seems like it's an all or nothing situation? I feel that my friends on the blue will refuse to see anything that may have been positive coming out of the side of the red. And my friends on the red absolutely refuse to see anything positive that may come out of the side of the blue.
Yeah.
And isn't that part of the same thing?
Yeah, the tribalism has gotten, you know, really, really bad. And I know when I was chairman, I think, Reed, I don't know when you came up with the Congress card speech, but I know it was when I was chairman, and it was, and I remember having conversations with you, and we were talking about who is your base. We talked about this last week mm-hmm. on this show. You know, who is your base? Is it the Tea Party, or is it, you know, we talked about the Obama Ribble voters. I mean, there's tens of thousands of people that voted for both Barack Obama
right.
and Reed Ribble. What an awesome thing.
It's a beautiful thing.
What a great statement that says about the work that you're doing for the community.
Right.
And during that time, Reed Jordan organization called No Labels.
Mm-hmm.
And it was something where legislators would come together, throw your labels out the door and try to do what's right and what's best for the communities they represent. They didn't throw their beliefs out the door.
Right.
But they put their egos aside,
yeah.
sat in a room and tried to hammer out and get things done. And people were so upset about that. I remember we would have events and there would be a press gaggle of people that wanted to talk to the congressman about, oh my God, I can't believe you're joining No Labels.
Yeah.
And so one night I remember talking to Reed and he's like, I don't think they're going to like what I have to say.
That didn't stop you from saying it though, did it?
No, and he got up in front of everybody, pulled out the member of Congress ID card. And he said, this says I represent the 8th Congressional District. This doesn't say that I represent the Republicans of the 8th Congressional District. This says I represent the people of Northeast Wisconsin.
Hold on, just time out before you go on with your story.
Yes.
Because that is a magnificent statement.
Oh, it was amazing.
It's a magnificent statement because, and I've said all along in my efforts here in the Valley, it doesn't really matter what side you lean on. If you are representing, whether it's 50,000, whether it's 150,000, mm-hmm. whatever the number is, they are not all on Team Red or on Team Blue.
No.
And the idea that an elected official can always vote on one side of things mm-hmm. or as if their side is always right. That's not right.
Right.
You have to have some rational thought and be willing to say, oh, you know what? It may come from the other side, but I can see the value and this is why it's going to be beneficial to my people.
Well, and it's not just that. A little inside baseball. And those events are events with donors, are events with people that are heavily involved in the Republican Party.
Mm-hmm.
At those events, the doors are shut
yep.
and the public is not allowed in. And so like what is talked about in those halls is not the Democrats are good,
oh,
you know? And so to have the courage to stand in front of that crowd, in front of those people and say, look, I don't just represent you.
Right. Right.
Is something
but that is the assumption, isn't it?
The hardest thing for people to hear is the truth.
you know, I had a, I've always believed that if you're doing your job as an elected official, everyone should be mad at you from time to time.
Yes.
It's true, yeah. Right? And Congressman, I think you would agree. Because you,
I was successful at that.
Yes. You have to have that mindset. And I go through the process, you know, any candidate has to kind of walk the gauntlet, right? To gain your supporters and who's going to back you and who's not. And if your goal walking in there, if you kind of just lay down and say, yep, whatever you want is fine, well, that's an issue. That's a problem.
Right.
I sit in front of these interviews and there's going to be points that I disagree on. There will be points. But in the end, if we can agree on 8.5 out of the 10, that's a good answer. It's a good answer because I think if you're honest with yourself, you have to be able to say to your donors, nope, I'm going to disappoint you now and then. I'll be able to share with you rationally why that was the best decision for the people. And I think that's also something that's coming away because the money and the leadership, the expectation is that you are a head nodder, which to me leads to people that are in positions of power that aren't leaders. They're now followers. I believe Congressman Ribble, you led in reaching across the line to find common ground with POCAN. I know you did. I was around to witness it.
Yeah, and Mark and I became friends. We hardly ever agreed on anything from an ideological standpoint, but there were many times that there were things that we needed to do for the state of Wisconsin that required Republicans and Democrats in the delegation to lock arms because we were a small delegation of only 8 members. And sometimes, you know, if all the Texas guys would lock arms and try to do something that would pull resources or whatever to Texas rather than Wisconsin, we had to show a united front against that much larger delegation.
Right.
And you can only do that if your colleagues respect you enough and trust you to allow you to do that.
Exactly.
And what I work very hard on is making sure that Ron Kind, Gwen Moore, initially Tammy Baldwin, and then Mark Pocan, that at a bare minimum, they could trust me that if I said I was going to do something, that I would do that. And
we're headed up to a break here. Well, let's finish that thought. Rational Revolution here, and we'll see you on the other side. I wish we could keep this music going. You know, just play some bangers. It's good stuff. Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. We left, Congressman Rubel was talking about the relationship between him and the congressional delegation for Wisconsin. I'm sorry I interrupted, but I'd like you to finish that thought if you could.
Yeah, well, you have to at times work with each other simply for the betterment of all of Wisconsin. And you can't do that if there's not enough mutual respect in how you talk about people and how you treat them. And so I just refuse to engage in the personal attacks that would often go on during campaign season because I knew that when I returned to Washington, D.C., there were going to be moments where I needed these folks to be on my side. And it's just so much harder when you're attacking them to gain any level of trust. And so I just didn't find it an effective way of managing my job there. And so it made people mad though. And you saw it, Mark, you saw people get mad at me because they didn't view me as a fighter. And yet my argument was always, what are you afraid of if I take conservative ideas into the marketplace of ideas and try to persuade people that we have the right solutions? You just want to talk in your own echo chamber. I want to expand who we're talking to, so I will talk to virtually anybody. But to do that, I have to start from a position of respect.
I think the respect is a big deal. I think, you know, being true to your word, being truthful in conversation and establishing that trust. I mean, what's the Maslow's hierarchy, right? I mean, that's kind of the basis of everything. I want to bring this conversation into Wisconsin now. We just went through the redistricting. We have the governor's maps have passed, which we've talked about at length, but it should really give us as close to a 50-50 state house as we've perhaps ever had, or at least in many, many decades. So leaning into the conversation of leadership, on leaning across the line, do you think that with the lines the way that they now are sitting, that the expectation of working together for the good of Wisconsin should go up?
Well, without a doubt. I mean, it would have to, you know, and I think I was engaging with someone on social media about just this, and he asked about, you know, the quality of candidates that we get for these state offices. Mm-hmm. And because how everything was so skewed, be it to the right or in some districts, very minority to the left, you don't get people, you don't get the best and the brightest all the time to run in these races, because if they are leaders in the community, if they are leader of business, you're not going to give up your business and run in a race where you're a Democrat and you're on a good year down by 9 points.
Exactly.
No one's going to do that for a $50,000 a year job.
Not a rational one.
No.
Not a rational one.
No. And so, you know, that equality, equity, I think brings all of the candidates, it's all going to rise to the top.
What's going to happen to the, because we know these members exist, right? We talked about coming into the fact that we have these fringe members, kind of the ones that are out there on the edges. Now that the lines are shifting in Wisconsin, what's going to happen to them? Are they going to be capable or willing? Or we just have to hope that the leaders that are left there, I didn't mean directional left, but the remaining leaders from both parties and the new people coming in are going to be capable of rising to the challenge. Do we believe that's possible?
I mean, on the right side, I mean, I was part of that redistricting that happened last time, and there was an effort to, there was a guy that was in the assembly. Leadership didn't like him very much. They drew him out of the assembly, and now he's a state senator. So, you know, funny how that works. But I think that conversation, that is, it's so germane to so much from federal to local to state. And it's, how do we have an honest conversation with people? Right. We talk about being a rational revolution. I'm going to get on a soapbox for just like 45 seconds here.
Hang on, Reed. Hang on. Here he goes.
But this is the question. We talk about the Republican Party splintering in two. If we want to have, and I'm ever an optimist. I always try to find common ground with people. I always try to get along and look for solutions working with people. But when you have one side of the political spectrum doing things that are so, it's not left or right, it's right or wrong. Mm-hmm. And you can't start that conversation from a rational position.
Right.
And so it becomes so much more difficult. And shows like this, conversations like this, are so important to this national discussion we're going to have over the next 8 months and beyond.
Right, right.
You know, there's going to be an autopsy here with the GOP of where do we go? I know we were really close the last time around to having that splinter of a moderate party. Mm-hmm. Reed, you know that. You know very well.
I know.
that we were very close.
Congressman, what are your thoughts in Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, my thoughts are never underestimate the ability of politicians to, in essence, act like chameleons.
Yeah.
And what I mean by that is, because the question started, will the leadership adapt? And I'm 100% convinced they will. They will automatically adapt to whatever the circumstances are that are there. And I have seen people, I think Congresswoman Elise Stefanik is maybe a really good example.
Yes.
She is and was and continues to be, from a voting standpoint, one of the most progressive-minded Republicans in Congress. Yeah. But yet she has almost completely changed colors to be this massive mega Trump supporter of all the people in the House of Representatives that I know, that I would have said is least likely to ever support Trump in this way, it would have been Elise Stefanik.
And now she's in the discussion to be VP.
Really good for my political career, and she just changed how she viewed things. And I could name a half dozen others that, when redistricting occurred, they went from being super conservative to being very moderate, or the reverse, from very moderate to being super conservative, I never really knew who those people were anymore.
Yeah.
Because they were completely different. But the reason they were different is because the voter was different and they were just following the voter.
Yeah.
I think the advantage that we have with these new districts is it was so skewed in the state of Wisconsin. It was so skewed for so long. And you know, if the abuses of power were so great that I think a lot of times the general public will be able to see past that and say, well, for the last 12 years, man, that doesn't match up to what you're trying to tell me here.
Yeah, I find the people that acknowledge that are older because they've actually were paying attention to politics for more than the last 10 years.
Which is good because they're the primary voters.
Yes. I think that where there's an issue are the people that weren't paying attention or they just started tuning in, or age-wise, they're just aging into it and they only have a decade worth of history. So they're the ones that are feeling like they're being robbed. They're, you know, things are being stolen from them. And you can understand that because they didn't see where it went, how it got here. And so I think that's part of the communication issue that, again, honesty and across the board saying, listen,
right.
There's enough insider information out there that we do know how things went down, you know? And so just, again, a little bit of forethought, look at it and say, here's where we are. Now, again, go past, if you could just put aside whether you're strong blue, whether you're strong red, what is our goal? Our goal is to be forward moving for the good of the people, right? That's our job. So can we now, with some accountability, look forward to our elected officials having to make an effort? I think the answer has to be yes. It has to be yes. If you have any optimism in your life, you have to think that with accountability, meaning all of us have realistically the chance of winning or losing, or at least most, then we have to be listening to our voters, not just our base. If we expect to be there, we must accept and look for compromise that moves in the right direction.
I have a question for you, and because I would love to hear your opinion on this, and I'm so glad to talk to you. But you talk about accountability, and you talk about, you know, can elected leaders do this? I mean, like on a national scale, on a big picture scale, the Republicans are months away from putting a nominee who is convicted for some pretty horrible crimes, financial crimes. He tried to overthrow a free and fair election. How does the GOP like recover from that? How do they get past that? You know, in 10 years down the road, well, yeah, that Donald Trump thing, that was, don't worry about that. This guy here, he's the real deal. How do they come back from this embarrassment?
Well, you have to realize that they don't think it's an embarrassment.
Yeah.
They think that this is a hoax. They think that all of this is, all the indictments are phony, that this is election interference. They believe the election was stolen from the duly elected President Trump. They never believed any of this stuff to begin with. And then they go to social media, they go to news stations that will continue to feed them that line, and so that's all they hear, and that's the space that they live in.
And every time a Republican tries to stand up and say no, this is factual, then they're thrown into the rhino category.
Mm-hmm.
So
worse, of course.
Yeah. Now that's the problem. Those that do stand up, they get kicked to the side. It's crazy.
Yeah,
they do. And I'll tell you something. The Marquette poll just came out. And Donald Trump is leading Biden in Wisconsin by 4 or 5 points.
Yeah, it's a big
Now, the
big
interesting
one.
Thing is Nikki Haley's leading him by 13 or 14.
Yeah, right.
And it is just a shocking look at things where Republicans can't see the obvious that's right in their faces, that if they actually wanted to win the White House and the House and the Senate, that Nikki Haley gives them their best shot at it.
It was like John Kasich from the previous primary.
Yep. They're likely to reject that, and they're likely to lose the House of Representatives in the fall because of it. They'll win the Senate, but they'll lose the House, I believe.
What do you think? So you talk about you believe the Republican Party will splinter. Like what?
I do.
how, when, what do you, like, expound on that?
Well, it's happening in real time now, and I think you'll see it particularly if Donald Trump is convicted of a crime. Yeah. I mean, actually convicted of a felony, that you'll see more people break away. And at that point, the populace who are so dug in and simply believe the lies that they've been told, they're going to continue to dig in. And in fairness to them, they have plenty of partners on the left. A lot of Bernie Sanders voters, there were 12 million of them that voted for Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And so
that's crazy.
That true populist, that anti-trade, anti-free markets, big business is bad, all those things, that has a lot of that resonates with a lot of Democrats. And so you're going to see a new party, I believe, emerging that will be, they might call themselves a populist party, they'll come up with some name, and they'll grab voters from both of those places. But I do believe that the traditional Republican Party is actually, we're watching it in real time breaking up into two right now.
That would be fascinating. Can you imagine having a nominee of a major party be unable to vote for themselves because they're a convicted felon?
It's just shocking to me that we're living in an alternate universe right now.
Yeah. We are living in an alternate universe.
It's wild. So you think if that comes to be, would they, whatever populist party, do you think that this would happen before fall? Like they would even have enough resources? And I know like Lincoln Project, our Republican Voters Against Trump, those folks, and we're coming up to a break here, so we got a minute. Do you think they would have someone and a candidate and a campaign to be able to put forth before the election in November?
Yeah, I mean, if you just look at anything on X or Twitter, whatever you want to call it, and a lot of Facebook posts by the mega right, their default fallback is RFK.
All right, we're gonna hit the break here, and we're gonna finish this up on the other side. We'll see you back in a little bit. Rational Revolution.
Busted flat in Baton Rouge, waiting for a train, and I was feeling near as faded as my jeans.
Turn up Chris's mic. Let's hear her sing.
Bobby thumbed a diesel down.
Welcome back to the Rational Revolution. We're live tonight. We're always live on the Civic Media app. Give that a download and find us there. As we come back here, we're talking with Congressman Reed Ribble. We were talking about the fracture of the Republican Party and will they have enough of a foundation, or how does that look? When is that? What's the timeline? I want to continue that train of thought.
Well, yeah, if for some reason they abandon Donald Trump at some point, I mentioned right before the break that their default is going to be RFK Jr., which is kind of where they're, you just see a lot of people that's in that Vivek Ramaswamy, the Tulsi Gabbard, the really quite far left wing of the populist movement, that they would rather have that because of their isolationist views than they would have somebody like Nikki Haley or a more traditional conservative.
Do you think the Republican Party would put one of those up?
Yeah, I don't know if the party itself would, but I'm saying their voters would.
Okay.
And here's the reality. What we've seen in the last 8 years of the Republican Party, they're going to follow the voters because that's where the money and power is.
I think that from both sides, I think that a third party candidate is dangerous. That's just a reality. I think that when from the Democrat side to look at the Republican Party in the chaos that it's in, I think that it scares them, honestly, to have the concept of a third party the same way it would the other side, because the splitting of the vote is dangerous. I wonder if at some point in time we could have the philosophy of a third party that was moderate. That actually,
oh God.
You know, but I always looked at it as you're always going to have the people on the far left pushing for what they want and the far right the pushing for what they want. And then there's the rationals in the middle trying to make the best decision based on how much it costs and the people that are affected. And I think there are a lot more people that are in that category. They are not full-on conservatives. They are not full-on progressives. But they are rational people that understand give and take. And I don't think we're there yet. I don't think we are, but I think if there were a conversation about a third party, I would really hope that that's what it would be based on. Go ahead.
Chris, I think it's going to be more than just a third party. I think it'll be a fourth and fifth party.
Yeah.
And then in the Congress of the United States, it will act more like a parliamentarian system where the Speaker of the House will have to put together a coalition government.
Do you think then it's going to go?
That's where it's headed.
Do you think that's going to then lead us down to like a final five voting method?
Like ranked choice?
Rank choice? Yeah. Something to, because I don't think you
could,
can do, I don't think you can do one without the other. I think that.
It certainly could.
Yeah, I think that the concept of ranked choice, and again, there's issues with it. You know how I feel about money, and Congress, you and I agree and disagree on some of that stuff. But I do believe that if we reduced the dollars going into, where in essence, the money, whatever side they're on, money is picking the favorites, I think that would change the game. But then if we could go down to a ranked choice, I would love to say, again, and I think Wisconsin is pretty purple. We know this to be true.
Oh, we are, of course.
You know, I have voted across the line consistently for many, many years. But imagine if we had a ranked choice where we can say my number one choice is blue. My number two choice is purple. You know what I mean? I mean, that in the end, it to me is a better representation of who we are, as opposed to give us your loudest guy or your best supported guy financially. And then, you know, Team Blue is going to do the same thing, which is really where we're at now. I don't think anybody shouldn't say that. There are plenty of people that like both of our potential presidential candidates, but there are many, many, many of us.
Well,
that
they're wildly
wish,
unpopular.
Yeah. That they wish are, yeah. we had better options.
Right.
Maybe we'd have that option, right? I mean, I don't know. There's got to be some. I don't think there's any question. We're broken. The system is broken.
Yeah.
And the anger that exists now comes with the frustration that it doesn't seem. We don't seem to be able to get out of it. You can understand why people jumped onto the drain the swamp concept, but nobody wants to drain the swamp of the people they like. They only want to drain the other side of the swamp. Well, it doesn't work
correct.
That way.
The same people that call for draining the swamp were the ones that reelected Senate incumbents by a ratio of 100%
in
2022.
Right. So it's just not a truthful thing.
I mean, how wonderful would it be if we had candidates of like, you know, Pete Buttigieg on the left and like Bobby Jindal or Larry Hogan on the right, you know, people that have big ideas that understand what it takes and what it means to get along with people. But I think the issue is, and this is what a fourth and fifth party would really, really weed out, is that primary system where those people like a Larry Hogan or a Bobby Jindal, they have to veer so far to the right.
Yeah.
And it's so far away from what they believe and so far away from what the populace of America wants.
Yeah.
Because you have to go to those hardliners that only show up, you know, for the primary, you know,
right.
So that would really be something.
It would really be something in our utopian
think?
World. You know, the three of us can just redraw everything we want.
Solve
it's
all
be
the
great.
Problems.
Yes.
But Chris, you started this conversation by saying you're fearful of it.
I know. Because it is.
And ended the conversation by saying it's like a utopia.
I know.
It's
true.
Exciting.
And
yeah.
that's the danger. That we've got 2 minutes left here, but that is the danger, right? To talk about things that change is scary and it creates a vulnerability. So if you are running as a Republican, if you are running as a Democrat, and we start talking about something that could jeopardize that, it's a natural response to be defensive. And the only way that I think we can start talking about these great big ideas that would be better is if from both sides, we start having these conversations saying, yeah, but what if?
Mm-hmm.
And then work through the consequences, because nothing is a perfect plan. There is no such thing.
But I think it's so much of it, you have to have the courage to have these conversations that we're having now. And, you know, when someone in your family says, oh, well, guess what? You know, there's a difference between the president of the United States and the commander in chief.
Right.
You could say, well, okay, whatever, you know, or you could say, no, that's not true.
Right.
And, you know, it starts with that. That's how we gain momentum here.
Momentum and back to civilized conversation, right? We are the rational revolution. And I really enjoyed, you know, I always enjoy having Congressman Reed Ribble on.
Reed, thank you. This was awesome. Good to hear from you.
Always love to hear your side of things, your opinion, and your insider information. Mr. Becker, it is a privilege having you as well.
Always an honor.
I look forward to having you on again next week. This is the rational revolution. Do your best to make good choices. Listen, learn, and share. We'll see you next week.
Slapping time, I was holding Bobby's hand in mine. We sang every song that Javi knew. Yeah.